The following podcast is a presentation of Sunridge Community Church.
I think that as I start to just share some thoughts here this morning, I just think this is one of the most significant times of the year, especially for those of us that we claim a kind of faith in this God and the person of Jesus Christ. And so it's interesting to just ponder just for a moment when you think of across the world, you know, everybody pauses to reflect on this event that there was a man by the name of Jesus, whether we believe it or not, what, you know, he was and who he claimed to be, the world pauses because of this historic event that he came out from the cave. Interesting, isn't it? Across the world. I want to talk a little bit about that event, but against the backdrop just of how it is that we as human beings, we long, don't we? We long for our lives to be significant, or we long for our lives to be doing good things. We long to become certain people that accomplish certain tasks, or we want to be in relationships, and we have the dream about the kinds of relationships that those would be like. We have aspirations in different things that we may just kind of just sit back on the lawn and think and meditate, and we come up with some quite amazing pictures as to what we would love for our life to be like. But I don't know if you're like me. So oftentimes, it just seems that I don't have the power, or I don't have what it takes to sometimes bring that about. You know what I mean? Sometimes there's things that I really would love to become, or I'd love to achieve, or I'd love to move toward, and life trips me up. Life gets in the way, and there's some things that just really, quite frankly, just brings a new reality. There's a guy by the name of Charlie Shedd. He was a speaker, apparently a well-known speaker. I heard the story. And so what Charlie would do is he had this talk that he would give on the raising of kids. Okay, so before he had any children of his own, he titled his talk, The Ten Commandments for Raising Perfect Children. Okay, well then Charlie had a kid. And so then he changed his title. And he changed his title to 10 Hints for Parents. Well, he and his wife, they had a second kid, and so he changed his talk again, and this time he changed it to a few tentative suggestions for fellow strugglers. He had a third. He stopped giving the talk, and that's the way sometimes life is. Yeah, you know, you have all of this idealism, but then life trips us up, and life gets in the way, and it's amazing as to how that can take our dreams and our plans and all of the things that we would really want to do quite good. And it goes in a different direction. And so we lack the power oftentimes of what it is that we want to do. And it's this thing called the human condition. 2,000 years ago, as I said, there's this historical event. There's this man named Jesus. And there's this small group of followers that would follow Jesus. What he said, they would try and do. Then he dies, and then this whole group that would follow Jesus, they just went away. And then comes this event, and something happened, something historical, to somehow create this movement that generated some kinds of convictions within this small group of followers. That just changed everything. And because of what happened, they believed it gave them power to move through life to accomplish the things that they really believed that their life should be about. Interesting. They believed that. So this group was so convinced that he raised, but not just that he raised. This small group of followers of Jesus, they were so convinced that God had the power to raise Jesus out of the cave, and that just in that power, it was somehow showing this ultimate expression that the enemy against the human race was defeated. Death. And death that represented everything that was broken in this world as well. Physical, spiritual. There was something of historical record that took place 2,000 years ago that so moved this small group of people, they reoriented their whole life around it. Interesting. And so this same power that was demonstrated 2,000 years ago, Easter, is now, we're being told, available to us as human beings. In our struggles, in our brokenness, in our disappointments, in all of those things that we would love for our life to be about that isn't, there's something that we are told, hey, there's a kind of power that I'm making available to you so that you can live life in a way that will be different than what it has been. Listen to these words, and I'm just kind of bringing everything that we're talking about this morning around a passage in Ephesians chapter 1. It says this, how unbelievably great is his power. We're talking about God's power. To help those who believe in him. Now that could be you and me. The same mighty power that raised Christ from the dead. That power, God is saying, I'm actually making that available to you. I want to talk about this morning the power that God has allowed ordinary people like you and I to live in. And I want to tell you a story, and it's about a man that lived long before Jesus, a man by the name of David. Story in the Old Testament. And I want to walk through the highs and the lows of this man, and I want us to understand what it was and how it is that he met God and he found strength and power to move through life in a different way. It's an amazing story. In the beginning of David, young David's life, he led quite a remarkable life. I mean, everything David touched turned to gold. He lived a charmed life. Extraordinary gifts, potential. There was a prophet by the name of Samuel that sought out this young man, and he anointed him. And he said, great things, David, are going to happen through your life. Great things. The dreams you're thinking, you're going to accomplish. And this young man's life did for a time. Then things turned around. And it turns out that, you know, that's what life does sometimes. But for a while, David was the favorite musician to the king. King Saul was the king of Israel at the time. He loved David. David was the best friend to the king's son, Jonathan. David married the king's daughter. That actually works really well for you to get up in position in those days. David, he was just the hero. They would sing songs about how great David was on the battlefield. Everything about David was up and to the right. Charmed life. But then a funny thing happened. It all fell apart. One by one, all of those great things began to be stripped away from his life. And King Saul saw how successful that David had been, and he started to get jealous. In fact, one day he takes a spear, tries to kill him, and David has to run for his life. So now he's without a job, he's without an income, he's without security. He actually loses his marriage because he has to flee. Things are looking really bad. He loses his marriage. Some of you know about that. And David loses his marriage, he loses his family, he loses his income. Some of you know about that. So all of this trouble's happening, and so David goes to the person that he thinks is going to be there to give him advice. And it's this old friend Samuel, the prophet, that anointed David one day saying, David, you are going to accomplish great things. So he goes to seek out Samuel while King Saul finds out that he's going to do that, blocks the way, doesn't allow David to get there. David has to scream out of town again. And get this, this is the saddest part of this story, is that Samuel will end up dying without ever seeing David again. David, never being able to see his mentor again. He dies. Next thing David tries to do is see his best friend, Jonathan, the king's son. But Jonathan can't stand up against the father who wants to kill David. And that one turns out that David and Jonathan never see each other again either. So he never sees his mentor. He never sees his best friend again. And that's how bad it is for David, but it gets worse. Israel, the country, his homeland, is so hot for this guy that he has to leave his own country. They want to kill him. So now he loses his home, his culture, his language. I mean, he's got to turn to an enemy city in order for a place to live. It's a place called Gath. A little bit about Gath. Gath is the home of a guy that some of you might remember. A big old kind of guy. A big old kind of a giant guy. An enemy of God. David goes up against this big old enemy guy on steroids with a slingshot. Anybody remember who this guy would have been? Anybody? Anybody? Goliath, exactly. And so Gath is the city where Goliath lived. So if there was ever an enemy town, it's Gath, the Philistines. David goes there. Listen to these words in 1 Samuel 21. So David escaped from Saul and went to King Achish of Gath. But Achish's officers weren't happy about his being there. Isn't this David, the king of the land, they asked? Isn't he the one the people honor with dances, singing? Saul has killed his thousands and David his 10,000s. David heard these comments and was afraid of what King Achish might do to him. So he pretended to be insane, scratching on doors and drooling down his beard. Beautiful sight. Finally, King Achish said to his men, "Must you bring me a madman? We already have enough of them around here. Why should I let someone like this be my guest?" David's so desperate he pretends to be insane. And they don't buy that either. And they kick him out of enemy town. Talk about rejection. Listen to this, 1 Samuel 22. This is where he ends up going. So David left Gath and he escaped to the cave of Adullam. Literally foaming at the mouth. They won't take him. They kick him out. He ends up having to find home in a cave. David, where has this all gone wrong? You have the palace and you're wealthy and you've got fame and security. And now you got no home, no friends, no money. You got nothing. And your home's a cave. Let's talk a little bit about the cave. Cave is a place where the doomed go. Cave is a place where you end up when all of your supports, where all of your gifts, where all of your dreams. That's where you are at in the cave. It's where you end up when you thought that your life was going to be great, but it's not. It's where you thought you'd do great things and you didn't. It's where you thought your family would be together and they're not. It's the cave. It's where your dreams turn to dust. It's not the plan. It's cave is a place where your dreams go to die. Some of you are in the cave right now. Some of you are in a cave right now. Maybe. You know, it's a vocational dream. It's your job. And you thought, by golly, that's what I'm going to do with my life. And you find yourself at a point where you're not. Or you don't have a job. And you've got a financial pressure on you that is just concerning. You worry about it every day. You're in the cave. Maybe it's in a relationship. Maybe you so desperately, you know, wanted your marriage to stay together, but maybe because of death or divorce or other circumstance, it didn't. Or you wanted a relationship, and it's just never come. Or you're in a relationship, and you thought it would be good, and you just like, this is the, you're in the cave. Maybe you made a bad decision, and you just went against better judgment, and you find yourself, how in the world have I landed here? And for whatever circumstances, all of the hopes, all of the dreams, all of the things that you had hoped for, they're dead, and you're in the cave. Maybe it's health. Maybe it's someone you love died. Maybe you're lonely. Maybe you've betrayed some values that went so deep with you, and you don't even understand why you betrayed them. Cave is a place of disappointment. The cave is a place of despair. The cave is a place, it's just where we don't want to be. It's a funny thing. We never plan on being in a cave, do we? We pride ourselves by doing cave avoidance. You ask somebody sometime if they take their spiritual life seriously, you ask them, when was it the most significant growth took place in your life? The number one answer I always come up against, the number one answer I always hear, times of struggle, times of problems, cave times. David spends 10 long years in the cave. Everything was going so great, and then everything crashed. He's in a cave. He's not alone in a cave. Goes on with the story, chapter 22, verse 2 of 1 Samuel. Then others began coming to this cave. Men who were in trouble or in debt or who were just discontented, until David was the leader of about 400 men. That's a promising group, isn't it? I mean, how would you like to lead that little group there? Debt and distress and discontent. So here's David and this band of whiners. You know, they established this little community in a village called Ziklag. That's where they live. They build families. They take wives. They have kids. And one day they go off to battle. And it tells us this in 1 Samuel 30. When David and his men arrived home after this battle, they come back to home. They found that the Amalekites, their enemies, had raided them. They carried off the women, the children, everyone else, but without killing anyone. When David and his men saw the ruins and realized what had happened to their families, listen, they wept until they could weep no more. David's two wives were among those captured. So they come back home after a day's work at the battlefield. Families are taken captive. They've lost everything. I mean, he was in the cave before. What would that have felt like? And then it tells us that they weep until they could not weep. Have you ever been there? I mean, you've just cried and you've cried and you've cried. You cannot cry anymore. You're completely spent. Then it gets worse. Verse 6, David was greatly distressed because his own men were talking about stoning him. Oh, man, have you ever had a bad day at work? Like, I mean, jeepers. This guy, if it wasn't bad enough, his own people, which ones? Those that are in debt, distress, and discontent. I mean, it's this band of whiners. They now want to kill him. So not only has he lost his home, his family, security, money, everything, he has just enough energy to kind of start this little thing on the side with these 400 men, and they want to kill him. And then kind of the point that I think all of us just ought to really just pause on, because there's great perspective in this short little line. Listen to this. 1 Samuel 30, verse 6. David found strength in the Lord his God. That's it. But David found strength not in his own brilliance, not in his own perseverance, not in his own resilience or capacity or determination. David, it tells us, he found strength. He found power. He found something outside of himself. And it tells us it was God. And it changed everything in his life. Now, his circumstances were not different. Everything on the outside looked just the same. But there was something in David that moved from death to life. Eventually, David comes back to Israel. He becomes king. And such a significant figure in the history of Israel, that when people looked back on the man David, who became king, when they would dream of one day there being a Messiah that would come, you know what they'd say? Oh, one day would a son of David come and rescue us from the disaster that we find ourselves in? Interesting. David knew the greats, you know, he knew the lows and everything in between. He made lots of mistakes. But I sometimes wonder, just as we've looked at the story of David, I wonder how many times in his own mind did he go back to the cave? I wonder how many times in his own day when they were not going well, he'd revisit the cave. Just mentally. You feel the coolness, the dampness, the complaining that it would often happen. Would he revisit how it is that he brought morale? How it is that he brought encouragement? How it is that he brought, there's going to be a solution for this problem. I don't know what it is, but God is going to give me some ideas. I wonder how many times David visited that cave. I wonder if those of us that we're living in the cave, if we would just learn well that sometimes God needs to strip away every single prop to teach us the lesson, God is enough. Because God does some of his best work in a cave. And it turns out that caves are why God sent his son Jesus. Turns out that when Jesus, the son of David, for a while we see that the son of David, Jesus, things went great, didn't they? I mean, everything that Jesus was about was loved. People loved to hear him teach. People loved to be near him. I mean, when Jesus would come into town, it was an amazing event. He'd heal people. He'd embrace the loneliest. He'd get close to children that were really kind of a distraction. Jesus, he was so desired, and everybody loved him. Remind you of anyone? They sang songs about Jesus. Just a few days earlier, Hosanna, Hosanna, glory to God in the highest. Palm Sunday. They just thought this man was absolutely marvelous. They loved Jesus. Not everybody did. There were some people, they were very disappointed in him. Some people wanted to kill him, and they did. And so what they did is they arrested him, they convicted him, they beat him. They took him and they nailed him to a cross. And the reason that he's nailed to that cross, we are told, is because it is its payment of sin. Now, for some of you, you're going to just go, oh, the sin thing. The Bible tells us that is why Jesus landed up on the cross, for your sin and mine. And Jesus died a criminal's death. The most unfair death that has ever been inflicted on anyone. And it was for our sin that he hung on that cross. It was for our sin that he shed his blood. It was for our sin that his body was broken. And they thought, that's it. That's over. It's done. They took his body off of the cross, and then they put his body into a what? Into a cave. The problem is they just forgot that God does some of his best in a cave. Cave is where God resurrects dead stuff. So these followers of Jesus, they were just demoralized. They were in despair. They didn't know what they were going to do with their life. And then this historical thing takes place, and it changed everything. And that is something that you and I, we will need to decide. What do we do with that? Because it's certainly something they believed in, and they changed their lives around that historical event. I mean, it's a matter of history. Something happened to them, and whatever it is that happened convinced them that this Jesus was alive. Wow. Now, it does not mean that their problems went away. In fact, many experienced brand new problems. We know that these people that just believed this to their toes gave their life with just the simple statement, he's alive. You say it again, we'll kill you. He's alive. You're dead. And they were. I mean, it's just, you just don't say these things unless you really believe it. They really believed it. And not only did they just believe that this Jesus was raised, but that the power that raised him they had access to. The power that raised Jesus from the grave, they had access to. Hear that, please, this morning. And somehow this unstoppable force of this group of people, they changed the world. And we're here today remembering this historic event. Jesus was dead, and now he is alive. Now, news comes to every person, man, woman, boy, girl. And so we have this decision that we all need to wrestle with to some degree, and the decision is this. When we find ourselves living lives where it feels like we're in a cave, where it feels like there's just so much disappointment and despair or just the frustration of things not going in the way that we can choose this. We can say, you know what, I'm just going to live in my little cave. I'm going to just kind of, this is what life has for me. I am going to be prepared to just live this slimy, little, small, dream-dead life. And it's a sad place to be. And you may not say it quite as bluntly as that, but we do see it all over, don't we? People choose to just kind of put up with cave life, such that they will never, ever understand that as long as they are trying to live cave life on their own strength, it is going to be so disappointing. As long as they try to live cave life on their own strength, it will always be defeating. Or we can choose to live cave life a different way. Cave life is something that is going to happen. If it has not happened to you yet, you might as well write it down. It's coming. Cave times come, don't they? We can choose to do cave time a different way, and that is, I am not going to do this on my own strength anymore. Because God, you seem to say that there is a power made available to people. If we get humble, if we surrender, if we acknowledge our need for a strength that is above ourselves, just like David found strength in the Lord, I want to do that too. And I'm not even so much asking that I get out of the cave. I'm just asking, would you give me strength while I'm in it? Because friends, quite honestly, faith in the Christian life is not problem-free. Oftentimes, it's additional problems. And so what we need to understand is that cave times are a given. They were for David, they were for Jesus, they are for you and I too. What do we do with them? You can do with the strength on your own, or you can do it from the strength of another. My recommendation would be that we would kneel down in our cave and we would just simply say, God, I don't want to do it on my strength anymore. 2,000 years ago, you allowed your son, you gave power to raise Jesus from the grave. That power, I'm just humbly asking you give me that kind of strength, that kind of perspective. The forgiveness that you offer for sin, I receive. Just not forgiveness, though. We, as we kneel in our cave, we would say, I also want you to be my friend, Jesus, my guide, my companion, and to lead my life every day, to be a real encouragement to those that are in the cave, and maybe I can give a little bit of love and a little bit of support and a little bit of encouragement to those as well. You got to make the decision. How are you going to deal with your cave times? God says, I have a power that's available. Why don't you access it? And so, the kind of power that we have is the power to forgive when we're hurt. The kind of power that God makes available to us is the power that we can be forgiven. The power for us to grow. The power for us to have a perspective that is beyond ourselves. God promises a power. And I don't know about you, but I'm 48, and I feel more inadequate with each year. I age. I want all that God has available. I know that it's not a problem-free life, but I do know that God promises a power, and I am humble enough at this point, because of my stubborn pride over the years, I guess, to just simply say, okay, I'm not going to do it that way anymore. God, please, the power you make available, I'm open to that. I'm going to invite the worship team to come forward. And as they do, I just want us to direct our thoughts a little bit with the reminder that God does some of his best work in cave times. Some of his best work he does in cave times. One of the things that I just want to provide for all of us is just the gift of time. And I want to just take a moment in the busyness of an Easter season for us to just simply reflect a little as to where you are at with your own life. What I mean by that is to relate with God in some way right now. Right now. I mean, I think it's so hard in cave times because one of the things we do is we say, God, have you forgotten me? I mean, I'm a Christian, or I have a faith. And we find ourselves in a cave and we say, God, you've obviously forgotten me. And maybe you'd want to have a little conversation about that, but we'd love to just allow you just a few moments, just a few seconds, to just relate with God, the God you believe in, the God you don't believe in. Across the world, we pause because of this claim that this man rises from the dead. And that Bible says it takes a lot to do that. And the strength that it took to do that, I'm allowing you to have access to. What do you think about that? You might find yourself here today and you just, and I needed a reminder of that. Because I just came out of a cave and I didn't do so well. Or maybe I'm in the middle of a cave and I just hate it. Maybe you're doing really, really well right now and you say, oh boy, you know, the cave's coming. Wherever you're at, I would just simply say, you know, it might be that you're here today and you've never really invited the power that God makes available to be by you. Just a simple prayer that would just say, God, would you please come into my life? Be to me. Be to me my strength. Just as David found strength in you. Just as Jesus had the power given to him to actually turn from death into life and go in a different direction. You ever get so frustrated that your life doesn't seem to be moving in a direction? Could it be God just wants to get your attention? Thank you, God, for your Son, Jesus Christ, his willingness to lay down his life. Thank you for the story of the power that you make available to change dead dreams into living dreams. May we remember this Easter, God, you do some of your best work in the cave. I pray for these people in this room right now that you would just meet them, touch them, make yourself very real to them. And I pray that all of us, wherever we're at, all of us, wherever our journey is, we take a step towards